He can still take vacations during the school year sometimes, so that's good for him. So we have a guest speaker this morning, and some of you have met him. He is Billy Humphrey from Baltimore, and a couple of you guys have met him when we've gone and done the outreach up there. He pastors at least one church, maybe two at some time, just one. But he also runs the Baltimore Dream Center, which I'm sure we'll hear much more about today. Billy and I go back, I figured it out, like 22 years. It's a long time. I made him promise that he wouldn't tell any embarrassing stories about our college life and our fraternity life. So I'll leave that there. Billy, everyone welcome Billy.
Good morning. Good morning. It's an honor to be here with you. I have known Nathan for a long time. I wish you wouldn't have said 22 years, but it probably is that long. I didn't have to make that deal with him because I figured if I didn't say anything bad about him, he wouldn't say anything bad about me. And we went to a Bible college, y'all. Just kidding. I don't necessarily mean anything, but you guys are like far away. So if I walk up here, is that okay? I'm learning the rules of your house. So nobody's in the spit zone. So it's an honor to be here with you all. And my name is Billy Humphrey. I'm from Baltimore. I was raised in and around. I moved a lot. I went to 5 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, 1 high school, but during that 1 high school, I lived in 4 different places. So my family just moved a lot. Quick little history about me. I'm the son of 2 chemically addicted parents. They both had opioid addictions. My father also struggled with alcohol. They both have since died due to complications from their addictions. But when you're a little boy and your parents are dealing with drugs, they ship you to grandma's house. So grandma took me to church in a little community on the south side of Baltimore called Brooklyn. And I grew up there, and then about 5th grade, it became uncomfortable to spend a night at grandma's house, or at least I grew old enough that I could take care of myself. So I only ended up going to church. I called myself a CEO. I went on Christmas, Easter, and like one other Sunday. So CEO. But y'all have any CEOs that come to Centerpoint? A few. It's okay. And maybe one of y'all are on your O visit, and I'm glad you're here today. But the end of my junior year in high school, I had a crisis in my own life. I was struggling with alcohol as a young man. I'd begun to dabble in drugs, and I seemed to be on a course to follow after my father. And my parents got arrested and busted for drugs. And the judge essentially told them that you have a choice here. You can either go to a methadone clinic, or you can go to jail. And so they chose methadone. I don't blame them, I guess. And so they went to the methadone program, and they started turning their life around. And for about 6 months, their court-ordered methadone, like, I saw such a change in my parents. They started going back to church. They never made me go to church before, so they didn't make me go to church at this point. I'm a junior, doing my own thing, working my own job. But I saw such a change in them that I was like, man. So they said, hey, come to church. I'd like come to church and like hang out behind the black curtain back there or out in the lobby. And I never came in. Little did I know, but I was really hopeless myself. I was struggling with alcohol. I used to keep a cooler in the trunk of my car with a couple bottles of beer and occasionally drink one on the way to school. Struggling as a young man, and two guys reached out to me. I'm not as big as I used to be. I used to be 400 pounds, but I have a great affinity for food, so the fact that y'all had some in the back is a big deal to me. I volunteer to take all the leftovers. No, but two guys asked me to go out to eat, and little did I know, but that simple invitation led me to Jesus, which led for me to turn my life around, which shortly after that I experienced the calling from the Lord, and I went to a place called Lee University now in Cleveland, Tennessee. Along that journey, that's where I met Nathan. And we started doing life together and connected, and I don't know how, well, I guess it was our mutual friend Daryl that got him to Maryland, but I'm a Maryland boy. This is my home. I'm from the other side. You can hold that against me if you need to. And so I always felt God was calling me to the inner city of Baltimore. And little did I know, but the Lord ended up in 1999 leading me back to my home church. So in 1999, I just went back. I was just a volunteer, man. I did whatever the pastor asked me to do. I didn't sing because that ain't my thing. But I, you know, if he wanted me to teach a class, if he wanted me to lead a Bible study, if he wanted me to set up chairs or tear down chairs, I just did whatever. And along the way, me and another guy said, there's such a need in this community. We started a food pantry, and that was almost 20 years ago. About 5 years after that, we established something which would have been about 15, 16 years ago now, a place called the Baltimore Dream Center. And we modeled it after a place called the L.A. Dream Center. They're doing things really big on a much bigger scale, but we were just trying to meet people at their point of need. My thought was, is how can I give them any Jesus if they're hungry? You know, how can you feel the hunger in their soul if they got hunger in their stomach? That was just my mindset. So I was like, all right, we're going to give them this food, and as we give them this food, we also give them the hand up, out, and the hand up, right? So it's going to be like, I'm going to give you food, and I'm going to show you love, and I'm going to tell you about Jesus. And that's how it all began, and that's all we did, and we just started doing that. And little did it known, but it's grown and grown and grown, and the Lord has just blessed us. About a year and a half ago, we even began a journey to do some things differently, and just in March of this year, so they introduced me as Baltimore Dream Center, but we're actually going through kind of a rebranding or a name change. We're calling ourselves City of Refuge Baltimore. I think I've got some slides for that. By the way, thank you, Joey, right? I like walked up to him 10 minutes before service and said, here's my slides, and can he figure out to put that in there? And thank you very much. But that's our new logo, and thank you, Joey. So I just want to tell you a little bit of story, and then I have like a little kind of sermonette for you. Can y'all hang with me for a little while? I don't know what, somebody holler at me what time y'all normally end so I don't go over. 11, is that real? Or I like a lot of time, but no. All right, Nathan, just tap your watch or do one of these or be like, whenever it's time, okay? So City of Refuge, just a little bit of our story. You can go to the next slide if you can. City of Refuge just exists to bring life and hope and transformation to both individuals and families. We're a nonprofit organization. I also pastor a church. Nathan said a couple churches because I was like, you guys are like a multi-campus church, right? Isn't there a, no? Oh, I don't know. That isn't there an Annapolis? Oh, that's that other church, right? I got you. So I pastor a church and lead a nonprofit. I'm here to talk to you about the nonprofit today. You can go to the next slide. City of Refuge, we focus now. So what started off as a simple food pantry giving out some groceries is now a nonprofit organization that has five major key impact areas, that being health and wellness, where we focus on food, clothing, most basic needs, meeting people at their point of needs. And then you have housing. We do a supportive housing program, human trafficking, vocational training, youth development. You can go to the next slide. Y'all listening quick because I can talk quick. In 2018, that's this year, right? Just since January, we've already given almost 100,000, just under 100,000 pounds of food have went through City of Refuge Baltimore, which translates out to be about 150,000 meals. Over 2,000 hot meals in addition to that are prepared through our soup kitchens. A number of you have volunteered at one of our soup kitchen nights on a Friday night and come out. We've re-gifted. Do you like that? Anybody re-gift? I love the power of re-gifting, you know. Somebody gives you something and you're like, we'll put that in the re-gifting pile, right? You know. So, but we've re-gifted over 25,000 pounds of clothing and household goods to include baby needs. We have a baby room where we serve, and then serve over 1,300 households just since the first of the year. A couple stories along the way. If you go to the next slide, next slide. There it is. This is Willie and Robert. I thought I'd tell this story. I've known Willie and Robert now. They're one of the folks who we reach really kind of early on in our days. Willie was a drug addict and a prostitute for 24 years in the streets of Baltimore. She tell the story, if she were here today, that there were many days she woke up in the curb. And it was on a Easter Sunday morning, right? CEOs, Christmas, Easter, and one other Sunday. Willie had a neighbor. She was living in public housing at the time. And her neighbor was this lady I refer to as Sister Winnie. And Sister Winnie kept inviting Willie to come to church. And on that Easter Sunday morning, she had been to our soup kitchen, our food pantry, and she came into church and found Jesus. Radical life change. Walked away from 24 years of drugs and alcohol and prostitution, and just has changed her life around. Willie met that guy, Robert. You see the guy, Robert? He's probably not a great picture of Robert. Robert was a guy who used to deal drugs in the streets of Brooklyn, in and out of prison, dealt drugs. Robert came in a few years after Willie and found Jesus, and his life got radically turned around and changed. And Robert ended up getting his GED because he had never graduated school. We helped him along the way. Robert's now attending Anne Arundel Community College, working on a degree, watch this, because he feels like he wants to be a drug counselor. Willie and Robert got married. I served as both the minister who officiated their wedding, and I had the opportunity to be the DJ. It was great. You don't see too many weddings where the guy who officiates is also the DJ, but it worked out that way. We put together a wedding. We pulled food from our food pantry so that we could make them a reception, and Willie and Robert got married and started doing life together. Robert had gotten his GED, started in college. They got married, and then we're partners with a program you've probably heard of called Habitat for Humanity. So Willie and Robert bought their first home, the only home they've ever owned in their life. Wow. You know what's cool is Willie and Robert both teach in our church now. They teach Sunday school, or they teach a Bible study, a belong group is what we call them, like small groups, and they serve. Willie's part of the hospitality team. When you walk in the door, she's like with a big old smile on her face and handshaker. If you met her, you'd probably think, not that girl, but that's their story. Transformation, you know. Isn't that what happens when Jesus comes into your life? Let me show you another one here real quick. I might not even get to this other stuff. There we go. This, see that guy right in the middle of that picture? This is a picture from one of our soup kitchens. He's kind of got white hair. Sorry, the picture's a little far off there. His name is Paul. Paul was the guy we met. We were doing an event. It was like, we call it Summer Jam. This year it's on July 28th, and we bring in all kinds of people. It attracts like 800 to 1,000 people. It's like the largest community event in the south side of Baltimore, in that Brooklyn community, and we just have fun, man. It's like a free party and a free flea market and hot dogs and snowballs and all that other kind of stuff. Well, Paul's family started coming to that event because they always liked free stuff, and they wanted to come, and so little did I know, but afterwards, he stayed and helped us clean up, and that began a conversation with a guy who ended up would tell you his story for 40 years. He grew up in the church in Kentucky, joined the military, and never came back to God until a few years ago, about 5 years ago now. Paul came to that Summer Jam event, started helping us clean up, began a conversation with Paul, and before long, Paul found Jesus, radically turned his life around. For the first 3 years, Paul said, Pastor Billy, man, you got to pray for me and my family. I never led them to Jesus. I knew about Jesus, but I never took them there. For 40 years, you know, he was doing smoking pot, doing pornography. He would tell you this story, so I got permission from these folks. So I'm not, they say it's okay. I'd have brought them here with me under different circumstances. But Paul, you know what, he got radically changed. And he kept saying, I want my family. And then before you know it, one of his daughters found Jesus. And another one of his daughters had found Jesus. And now his wife has found Jesus. And she's become a volunteer at the City of Refuge in our health and wellness area, and she cooks on Friday nights and Tuesday mornings and everything else. And if y'all know anything about South Baltimore, Terry's like South Baltimore, you know? Like, she'll talk to you, and you'll be afraid. I mean, like, legit, you'll be like, that lady's about to hurt me. It's just how she is. But the reality is, if you'll take the time to get to know her, you'll find out how soft her heart really is. Just changed. I mean, like, see, when you reach into the heart of someone who has no hope, and you bring hope, and that hope comes to life because of who they've encountered, Jesus Christ, it changes their life and all the lives of those around them. Does that make sense? Here's the next one I thought I'd show you. We'll keep going here. We'll keep going. This is our Level Up after-school program. We have an after-school program in a Baltimore City public high school. If you all know anything about Baltimore City public high schools or public schools, you may not know this, but it is the school system in America that receives the third most amount of money for any student. You know how you got this old, like, if they had more money, they could do more things? Well, there's only two other districts in the entire United States of America that get more money than Baltimore City per student, but yet our schools are failing our students miserably. And there's lots and lots of factors, and people have lots and lots of opinions, and I get that. Baltimore City is now considered to be the most violent city in America. Yay me! What you may not know about Brooklyn, it is quickly becoming one of the most violent neighborhoods in all of Baltimore City. So a lot of challenges. We have huge human trafficking just since March 1st, from March 1st to the end of April, 2 months, 60 days. The only way to judge the volume of human trafficking in a community is by number of arrests. And there were 48 in 60 days. 48 incidences where police arrested either men or women who were involved in human trafficking. The only way to do that is if one of those women or one of those men, right on either side of the deal, are an undercover policeman. So these weren't like 24 incidences, they were 48. You follow me? It's pretty intense. Here we go. Level Up is our after-school program. We have 35 students out of this public high school who participate in this after-school program. And what we're trying to do is really help them with academics, behavior, attendance, behavior, and class, academics, right? So we're trying to help these students. This is a group of some of them. Some of these city kids, we brought them on a trip to Ocean City back in February. It's this little thing called Winterfest, and it was kind of cool. Some of them had never crossed the Bay Bridge. Teenage boys in Baltimore, not even 40 miles from here, had never crossed the Bay Bridge. This is a group of those students. You can go to the next slide. I'm going to tell you the story. I want to point out, wait a minute. Next one, and then we'll come back to that one. I put them out of order. One of those boys in that picture right there, Level Up, his name is James. James is, I've only known him since September, and James has lived in three different places since September. Three different homes, and one of them was a hotel around the corner. He said, see the two young ladies in the tie-dyed, I don't know if you may not see their faces, but they got tied-dyed. Their names are Tiffany and Audrey. They run our Level Up after-school program. And Tiffany and Audrey, James walked up to one of them about 2 months ago and said, can y'all adopt me? And they're like, so Tiffany and Audrey are like 22 and 24, and he's like 16, you know? So they were like, nah, I can't do that. You know why he did that? Because he finds more stability in an hour and a half to 2 hour after school program called Level Up than he can find anywhere else in his life. And he finds consistency, and he finds encouragement, and he finds hope. And there's something powerful when hope comes to life in somebody who has no hope. Amen? Amen? All right, let's go. Go back to that one slide. This is the last one I'll tell, last story, I think. But this is the Bear family. They're pretty cool. We just started since January. So somebody shows up, and they give me a house, like, at the end of the last year. And then I got another house given to me in January. And I'm like, what am I going to do with these houses? Like, they just gave me row homes. They're little city row homes. If you've ever been in Baltimore, there's lots of row homes up in there. And they just give me, one of them was move-in ready. The other one's kind of a fixer-upper. So I'm fixing it up. But that first one, I was like, what am I going to do? I don't know. And I had went to something and listened to some guy from Dallas, and he was doing this thing called supportive housing. And I was like, Next thing I know, it was like, I know what you're going to do. You're going to find a family who's in crisis, and you're going to come alongside them, and you're going to support them and encourage them. So here's what we did. I know this is kind of weird and radical. It's kind of new, but I like it. Are you ready? So we came alongside the Bear family. Jesse, the mom of the family, has a job working in an office, that kind of thing. Her husband was working in a landscaping company, got laid off back in October. Prior to that, though, they were renting for $1,200 a month. For $1,200 a month, they lived in a house in which there was a small leak in a toilet that the landlord wouldn't repair, and all of a sudden that small leak became a really big leak, and the basement flooded out. So the homeowner's insurance, because of the flood and the damage, that, by the way, that's where their adult son, their oldest son, he's 16, lived. He was a student in our after-school program. That's how we made connection. And they ended up having to spend 3 months in a hotel living because the insurance company of the landlord and the landlord couldn't get on the same page about what should be done in the basement. They finally get back in, and now it's like November, December, and it's cold. Well, between Christmas and New Year, the heater breaks in their house. They call the landlord, and you know what the landlord blamed? He says, it's y'all's fault. You broke it. It was because a little belt in this furnace thing snapped. And, like, the landlord accused them of breaking the belt, right? Who would do that? Does anybody remember December and January? We're not that far away, right? It was cold, you know? Like, they had pictures on Facebook of, like, them under, like, 20 layers of blankets, you know? And I remember this was about the time I'd gotten this house, and I'm like, what can I do? The husband had gotten laid off. The kids are freezing. The landlord's a bum. What are we going to do? And I said, I moved the family in. And I said, here's what we're going to do. You've been paying $1,200 a month. Let's play $600 a month. And I'll keep $100 to pay expenses, and you keep paying the utilities so you get used to that deal, right? And for 12 months, I'm going to help you get back on your feet. You pay down your debt with the rest of that money. You get your house in order, save some money, do everything you can do. What they don't know is that at the end of that 12 months, I'm going to give them $500 a month of that back. So in 12 months, about December of next year, matter of fact, I'm kind of probably going to do it as a Christmas present. I'm going to say, hey, I got $5,000 for you. What if we help you buy a house and you change the odds of your life and your family forever? That's our heart and our goal behind City of Refuge. We're not just talking about transformation, like we're going to preach you Jesus and get you saved and woo, you know. Nah, it's going to be more than that. We're going to come alongside you because we realize the curse of poverty is not so easy to overcome. I really don't know how I overcome it in my own life, to be honest with you, but for grace, where would I be? I get it, we're the land of opportunity, but you'd be surprised how many people who are in poverty who are unaware of the opportunities or simply live in a place of defeat like they can never overcome. And that's what we have. We have the greatest hope giver, right? I always say, let's deal hope, not dope. Right? My next t-shirt I'm getting made, I'm going to be like City of Refuge, and on the back it's going to say Hope Dealer. Y'all want one, I know. I'm not sure how it sells on Kent Island, but, you know, in Baltimore, on the streets of Baltimore, that's like, they're like, right? I think, did I put anything else in there? Was there one last one? Maybe not. That was it. Okay, go to that other one. Let me quickly, I got a few more minutes. Y'all heard of this story in Ezekiel called about the Valley of Dry Bones? Y'all ever heard that story? Do you know that is actually one of the most popular Bible stories? If you were to take a survey of Christians in America, one of the most famous Bible stories is this story in Ezekiel regarding the Valley of Dry Bones. Matter of fact, there's a great song. They were playing it earlier as I was sitting at my table and talking to Joey, trying to throw my slides on them last minute. Thank you again, by the way, young man. It's about these dry bones. Y'all heard that song? About the dry. Yeah, they were playing it just earlier. So let me. Is it better if I'm back there or up here? I'm all about being up here because y'all ain't got to get some front row people, Nathan. You got to talk. come some front row. So here's the story. Let me read the first six verses of Ezekiel chapter 37 to you. Let me talk to you just for a few moments and break this down for you, and then we'll pray and get out of here. Is that cool? Y'all good? I'm a little different. Sorry. If I throw in some jokes along the way, you'll just have to know because I love life. And here we go. It says, the hand of the Lord came upon me and brought me out in the spirit of the Lord and set me down in the middle of the valley, and it was full of dry bones. So just to give you a little background, this is Ezekiel. He's a prophet, and he's kind of praying, talking to the Lord, and all of a sudden he catches this vision from God. It's like a dream vision. All of a sudden he's like, and here's the dream. The hand of the Lord came upon him, brought me out of the spirit of the Lord, set him down in the middle of the valley, and he's in this valley, and it's full of dry bones. Everybody got the imagery there? Right? Right? Say, yeah, okay. Sorry, I'm used to people talking back to me. City people, they're like, yeah. Okay. Then he calls me to pass by them all around, and behold, there were very many in the open valley, and indeed they were very dry. And he said to me, son of man, can these bones live again? And so I answered, Ezekiel answered, he said, O Lord God, you know. Verse 4 says, and again he said to me, prophesy to these bones and say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. Here says the Lord God to these bones, surely I will cause breath to enter into you and you'll live. And I'll put sinews on you. It's like ligaments, joints, all that stuff on you, and bring flesh upon you and cover you with skin and put breath in you, and you'll live and you'll live. And then you'll know that I am the Lord. I love this section. You can read it. You can read all the way, all of Ezekiel chapter 37. It kind of unpacks this. It's very familiar portion of scripture, as I shared. But you have to realize that this time in the history of Israel, or really we should say the history of Judah in Israel, because they were northern tribes and southern tribes, it looked like the offspring of Abraham, the seed of Abraham, had fallen, and they were never going to come back. In other words, all hope was gone. They were in captivity. They were in destruction. It was trouble. There were the 10 northern tribes. If y'all aren't history people, just bear with me for a few moments. And then there were the two southern tribes. And the 10 northern tribes were referred to as Israel. They had been carried off into captivity by a group of people called the Assyrians in 722, and 117 years later, at about 650 BC, there was a group called the Babylonians, Syria, Iraq. Okay, you're with me? And they had conquered the Assyrians, and so they began to pillage Judah and to carry all of their citizens into captivity. And so this particular prophecy of Ezekiel occurs in a period of times that's about 20 years until Jerusalem and the temple of God are rebuilt by a guy named Nehemiah, Ezra and Nehemiah. So for those of y'all that aren't real up to speed on Bible history, I'm talking some Old Testament kind of stuff to you. So Ezekiel comes in with this prophetic ministry, and he's kind of like, what that means is he's a preacher. Right? He's pointing people in the right direction. Prophecy just points people in the right direction, right? I'm trying to point us, right? Every time you're Pastor Reynolds, right? He preaches, he's trying to point us in the right direction towards God. And so here's what Ezekiel's doing, and God's calling him out. He drops him in the middle of this valley with this vision, right? And everything's dry and dead and gone. And we may be going through some stuff like that. We might have some dry places in our own heart and life. We might have some dry times morally or economically or socially, where we feel like everything around us is drying up. It's dying. The valley of dry bones. And it was during this time in the history of Judah and the life of Ezekiel that God gave the prophet this very powerful vision. And the events described in the text in Ezekiel chapter 37, it's described as though it's literally happening. Like if you're not careful and you don't read verse 1 real carefully, you'll think like, is this really happening? But it's a vision, and Ezekiel is experiencing it, and it's a very powerful symbol. And this vision reminds, I think, all people of faith. That's why we're here today, I think. Through all the ages, even in 2018 over here on Kent Island, the vision reminds us that despite how bad things may look, God can always turn things around. If you look through the eyes of Ezekiel and you go with him into the valley of dry bones, the vision begins there in 37 verse 1. And he says, the Spirit of the Lord set him down in the middle of the valley that was full of dry bones. Verse 2, Ezekiel tells us that the Lord caused them to pass by them all around. That is, that it walked all around the valley. Everywhere he looked, he saw bones, bones, bones. Indeed, he said, they were very dry, right? What does very dry imply? Very dry bones implies that they'd been there a while. Like, you know, really dead. Yeah, yeah, thank you. Y'all are helping me, see? So I'm going, yeah. Really, very dry. They were really dead. And the most obvious answer is the question that Ezekiel could have answered. This is one of the little nuggets that you got to catch right here. He says the most obvious answer is, nope. Can these bones live again? Nope. Right? Isn't that the most obvious answer? Like, can these bones? No. No, I'm pretty sure these bones won't ever live again. But when God asks a question, you have to be careful how you answer it, right? So think about how Ezekiel answered it. So God asked him, the Lord asked him in this vision, can these very dry bones live again? Can these very dead bones, right? They've been there a while, right? Can they live again? The most obvious logical answer is nope. Nope. They ain't gonna live again. But Ezekiel must have been a pretty smart dude, or at least pretty savvy, because he says, oh Lord, only you know. Did you hear me read it? Like, dude, that's a good answer, right? Like, I wouldn't have thought of that one. I did not have that one in me. If he'd have asked me if these bones were living again, I'd have been like, not a chance. It ain't gonna happen. They are dried up. First of all, why you even put me here? I'm a pastor. I do funerals. I don't even like going to the cemetery, y'all. I mean, my parents are gone. My grandmas are gone. My sister died last year. I got my immediate family above me and over me. They're all gone. People are like, do you go to the cemetery? I'm like, nope. Because I'm afraid the Lord's going to say, can these bones live again? And I'm going to be like, nope. Because, I mean, apparently I'm not like Ezekiel. I'm not wise. And he goes, oh, Lord, only you know. In other words, what he's saying is I don't know, but you do. What does this valley of dry bones represent? He tells us at the end of this vision that these bones represent Judah and Israel. I get it. By all outward appearances, Judah and Israel were dead and gone. They had been in captivity for years, first taken by the Assyrians, and then the Babylonians not only took the Assyrians, therefore that means they took the northern tribes, the southern tribes. I mean, they wiped them out for years. They're in captivity, you know? And I mean, like, can this country, they destroyed the temple. They destroyed Jerusalem, right? Ezra rebuilds the temple, right? Nehemiah comes back, rebuilds the walls, if you follow out the history. But can these bones live again? Ezekiel is in this unique position while they're in captivity, seeing everything that's gone. It seems like there's no hope at all, no life. Only you know, not me. Only you know. And all of a sudden, you know, are you following this story? Like, it blows my mind. And as a nation, they consider themselves dead and buried. And we know something about God that gives us pause. That's why we're probably in church today. Even when we're looking at the valley of dry bones, we know that God can make the dead to live again. We know that God specializes in things that are impossible. We know that even after it looks like there's no hope, that there can still be hope, right? That's who we are as people of faith, as followers of Christ. We know that when it looks like there's no way, God is still able to make a way. Have you ever been in that kind of deal? If he can speak a universe into existence out of nothing, more than the power of his will and his word, then he can reach into the valley of dry bones, and if you follow the story all the way out, raise up an army. And he can reach into Babylon, and he can Babylon, modern day Iraq, and he can rescue a nation. He can reach into America. He can send a revival that will change hearts and lives. He can reach into your life. He can raise up a dream that maybe you've buried deep down in your heart. In this vision, God told Ezekiel to start prophesying or preaching to the valley of dry bones. And he said to tell them bones, surely I will cause breath to enter you and you'll live. Can you imagine, like God says, preach to this valley of dry bones. It'd be like walking out in the middle of a cemetery and start preaching, right? Stand up on the tallest tombstone. You know, gotta get your pulpit, right? You know, and start preaching in the cemetery. I mean, he's telling them to preach to these dry bones and telling them that they can live again. And all of a sudden, he starts putting the sinews, you know, the joints and the ligaments and the muscles start building back on. And all of a sudden, flesh and the beginnings of skin. He says, I'll put breath back in you. He's preaching this to these dry bones in this dream, in this vision, right? Remember, it's a metaphor, okay? It's a metaphor. In reality, this is a message for Judah and Israel, and also us. And God is telling his people that they're going to live again, that they're going to be a nation again, and they'll be restored and revived, and they'll know what the Lord, who the Lord is, and he is God. And I can't tell you that as a pastor and a preacher that I've been in situations where it looked hopeless. My own journey, just from the natural, at times it looked like it was over and done. There's been times in my life where I've been like, ugh. I know y'all don't do that. You know, like, I'm like, God, what are you doing? I remember one time going, God, whatever you're trying to teach me, would you just teach me? Because I don't want to go through this stuff anymore. I also remember a time in my journey where my second son, his name is Luke. He's now 12, almost 13 years old. And he was born 5 weeks premature. You know, I'm a rookie parent at this point. My other son's only a year older. And he's in this little incubator. I mean, he was born and they literally like took him, the C-section deal, right? So they took him, they clean him up. They let me like take a peek and then they roll him off into the NICU, right? And he's there and you can't even touch him. I remember thinking to myself, what's this all? His little lungs weren't fully developed, and they just had to watch him. And I was only 5 weeks, but it, you know, now the technology is amazing. But, you know, as a parent, you're scared. You're thinking, what's going on? How am I going to get out of this situation? What am I going to do? It was like when I was a junior in high school, and I was drinking alcohol, and I was in trouble, and I started to dabble in drugs, and all of a sudden, I didn't like my life anymore, and I didn't want to do life anymore, and I started having thoughts of suicide, and I just want to end this thing, and I thought, there's no hope for me. Look at my parents. Look where I'm headed. How am I going to get there, you know? All of a sudden, somebody started preaching a little hope to me. Somebody started preaching that these dry bones can live again. And I found hope and it started coming to life in me. And it's changed my life forever. I'm now 44. I shouldn't have, you know, Nathan, 22 years. You could have said, we've known each other for a while. My entire adult life, I have been ups and downs and ins and outs. And it seemed like it was full of dry bones, right? If you came to Brooklyn and hung out with me, I'll take you to some places where it'd be real easy to write off. It'd be real easy to call them a valley of dry bones. And you'd say, dude, why are you preaching there? Why are you preaching in that world? Why are you in a community where I don't even know if I'm supposed to tell you this. Y'all might not come back. Do you know that on the safety scale, 100 being the safest community in America, do you know what we rank? 100 being the safest. We're one of the least safest communities in the entire country. Don't please come back. Do you know that in our community, almost 40% of the households live below the poverty level, which is below about $35,000 a year. But you know what's crazy about that situation? It is that you have to keep in mind, we're in Maryland. So less than $35,000 a year in Maryland, where the average rental cost for a 2 or 3 bedroom row home that's in poor condition with landlords that won't fix a dripping faucet that end up in a flooded basement, and then the heater breaks and you blame the tenant so you won't fix their heat? $1,200 a month. $1,200 a month for a family that's living on $35,000 a year doesn't go very far. Plus, we're in Maryland, y'all. You know, y'all look at your taxes. It's crazy. I mean, we tax everything, even rain. Y'all with me? I mean, these families are in crisis. Like, you could drive up into Brooklyn, and people are like yesterday I was with some people, and I told them I was in Brooklyn. They're like, huh? You know? It's like, I don't live very far from here. I actually live in Arnold. My wife teaches right over in Annapolis at a little elementary school called Windsor Farm. So I went with the happy wife, happy life theory, and we moved to Arnold. So I got to drive 30 minutes to the ghetto every day to do work. And don't get me wrong, I love it, you know? It's like I'm driving onto the battlefield and I'm driving off the battlefield. It's intense, right? It's intense. But you know what? You would drive up into Brooklyn and think there's no hope. 51% of the children are being raised by single parents. Usually it's a mother. 48% of the children in our community are raised in poverty. We have a 55% graduation rate in our community. Do you know that if a child who is raised in poverty does not get an education, the chances of them living in poverty are like 98 point something percent? It's virtually inevitable. I get it. You could drive up into Brooklyn and think, dude, it's over, man. But you know what? God picked me up and dropped me right down in the middle of that. I guess you could say he called me home, because I used to be one of those dry bones. Willie and Robert used to be some of those dry bones. Paul used to be some dry bones. The Bears were on their way to being dry bones. And So God put me down in there, man. I just got to speak and hope to life. Now listen, you may not be in the valley of dry bones like Brooklyn in the valley of dry bones, but you might be right where you live today. Maybe it's around the corner. Maybe it's the next exit up on 50 or 301 or wherever it is you're coming from. Because the reality is we all have dry places in our heart, don't we? At times, not always. At times, maybe you're going through something right now, and you ever pray and you feel like, at least here it's like a tall ceiling, right? But even that, like, you feel like your prayers are only like getting there and not even further. Like, you got more month than you got money. Maybe the doctors are giving you some report that ain't real good, right? But we got Jesus, and with God all things are possible. If in Ezekiel's case, he can prophesy to these very dry bones, which really what he was prophesizing to a nation that had been taken into captivity and war pillaged, not once, but twice, and literally destroyed and annihilated, right? If God can walk up into Brooklyn and he can turn some people's lives around like Willie and Robert and the Bears and James and all these other folks, right? James was just in our church. We have like this altar thing, and at the end we just do like the prayer like we're going to do here in a minute. And James just like walked himself up to the altar, and he was like on his knees, and he was praying and crying out to God. I didn't know James 9 months ago. James has zero church history. None. His only experience the church is that he found Jesus through Tiffany and Audrey, who I hired to work in a level up after school program at one of the most disadvantaged high schools in one of the most disadvantaged school systems. They got plenty of money, but they're not spending it wisely. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know they're struggling. And here's James coming up in this environment, and Tiffany and Audrey meet them and start trying to help him do his homework and come to class and have better behavior so that he could hopefully graduate, right? Because if he graduates and we can help him find a job, chances are we might get James out of poverty. This is what City of Refuge is all about, and you guys have been a part of that. Because you've come as bringers of light. You've come as hope dealers. You've been there, I think, three times, or is it four? Four times groups from this congregation have got on your car on a Friday afternoon or at the end of the day on Friday and burned rubber across that bridge and up to the south side of Baltimore, and you've helped us give a hand out and a hand up. You've went with us up even further into the city where they got the tent villages and all the homelessness and given a little hand out so that we could give a little hand up. So don't underestimate that you got a little Ezekiel in you. Don't forsake the thought that God might use you prophetically. Now, some of y'all don't, I don't mean to scare you with that word. Just point people in the right direction. That's what it means in the most simplest terms. You get to point people to Jesus. Here on Kent Island, maybe over there in Annapolis, over there a little further, Graysonville, wherever. Maybe you live near me in Arnold. Maybe you come to Baltimore. We get to do this, y'all. We have the hope of the world, Jesus. We were singing about him today, right? Y'all probably, if any of y'all were stairs, you know, I was holding back because I like to move, you know. They were singing, man, and I was wanting to dance a little bit, and I didn't know how y'all would take it. So I was like, try to be reserved, Billy, try to be reserved. Try to be reserved, you know. They got to singing, and I was like, woo! And then I saw that lady sitting right there, and she raised her hand. I said, yeah, she can raise her hand. I can raise my hand. Yeah, you know. Because I'm like, woo! Because we get to do this. We get to be Ezekiel's. We get to speak to dry bones. We get to see hope come to life. Will y'all pray with me? Father in heaven, I thank you for this beautiful congregation and the work they're doing here in this community on Kent Island and around. And I pray for them today, and I pray for us. I pray, God, that you would bless them. I pray, God, that you would keep them. Lord, I thank you that they're a part of us now. They're a part of us now. God, we honor you in that, and we thank you in that, that they've reached up into our valley of dry bones and are helping us bring hope to life. It's where good works. But God, they have a work here too. They might have a dry place. There's a song that says, breathe, O breath of God, now breathe. Later on in that prophecy in Ezekiel chapter 37, Lord, you told Ezekiel to prophesy to the breath because you wanted those valley of dry bones that were walking around like sinews and muscles and skin, but they weren't alive. You said, breathe into them, and breath of God came in them. I pray, Lord, that the breath of God will come in us. So as this music team sings and we say our final prayers and say our goodbyes, I pray, Lord, that we would be reminded of this story, the most famous story about Ezekiel in the valley of dry bones, that, Lord, nothing is ever really over when you're involved until you say it's over. Breathe, O breath of God, now breathe, O breath of God, breathe. I pray the Lord bless you, and keep you, and his grace shine upon you. And may the Lord be with you always and forever. Can we sing one time? Stand up, let's sing.